Hey there, sports history fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
If you're like me, you know, a fan of football, you are aware of the good and the bad of the NFL. You're probably aware of all the many different hours of football follies and outtakes that you can be watching. You probably laughed at several of the outtakes from football, but you've also probably watched many hours of great catches, great drives, and memorable moments. That's what football fans do. We watch everything we can about football, the good and the bad. In experiencing the good, you also experience the bad. The new look Cleveland Browns and their fans have experienced the bad. Ever since the Browns were reborn in 1999, they haven't had much to be happy about. I believe that's changing now, but for over 20 years, the Browns have been stuck in the mud, so to speak. When I say 20 years, I'm not talking about the longer history of the Browns name. I'm not taking into account the greats like Jim Brown and Otto Graham and Ozzie Newsome and Bernie Kosar. I'm talking about the expansion Browns, a team that has struggled ever since that they came back. Since the 1999 season, the Browns have put together a 101 win, 233 loss, and one tie record during the regular season, and an 0-1 record in the playoffs. But like I said earlier, they are looking a lot better at the recording of this program. I guess you can sum up the Cleveland Browns in one word. It's that jersey of the starting quarterback. 28 names could be listed on the back of that jersey. 28 starting quarterbacks. That tells you something. The fans of the Cleveland Browns deserve a lot more than what they're getting now. And guys, I'm going to be honest, I can relate to what's going on in Cleveland. I grew up a Vanderbilt Commodores fan. I've experienced in my lifetime just a very, very small number of winning seasons under the Vanderbilt Commodore football team. I've been to two bowl games, which they won both, but it got to a point where I said, I just cannot handle this anymore. You are some of the most dedicated fans on earth. You are amazing, and I applaud you for the dedication to your team. Hopefully this year will show you something and the Browns will turn it around, as long as it doesn't come at the expense of my Titans. By the way, I enjoyed the movie Draft Day. I really did. And every year during the draft time, I watch it. There, I said it. I hope you enjoy the interview with my friend Chad. He is a lifelong Cleveland Browns fan. Maybe you can relate to what he says. If you want to be part of this podcast and talk about your favorite team, you can get in touch with me at Jeremy_McFarlane or the Footballist Family Podcast Facebook page. Thank you for joining me at the Footballist Family Podcast. I'm glad to have everybody back to Footballist Family Podcast. I got a special guest here, one of my best friends in the world, my brother here. Would you like to introduce yourself?
Yes, my name is Chad Sargent, and I'm a diehard Cleveland Browns fan.
Now, when somebody says that they are a diehard Cleveland Browns fan, they mean it. They mean it, because you can't be a wishy-washy Cleveland Browns fan, can you?
No, you can't. There's no middle ground when it comes to being a Browns fan.
Now, Chad and I have had discussions for a while here. The new Cleveland Browns since 99, you view them as an expansion team, don't you? They're an expansion team.
Yeah, and they play like it.
Well, I was
continually play like one.
It's sad. I like the Browns. You know, it's what was that jersey that they have that has about, what, 20 different quarterbacks, 21 different quarterbacks on it?
I forget what the last count was. I want to say the last I seen was like 27, 20 or 28. It might be more than that now.
Good gracious.
Soon to be another one if he doesn't start the – he needs to start going through his reads a little better.
Well, I was seeing something today, a mock draft, had them picking a quarterback in the first round in the coming draft, and I thought, oh, that's a little tight. But I've got a few questions for you, and this podcast is about what makes football special to you. And you and I have had several discussions about football. We played some Madden. We both love football. And so tell me, what is your first memory of the NFL, of NFL football?
My first memory, I would have to say, would be watching it with my father really young. The old floor model TVs sitting in the living room and him usually screaming at the at the TV set. My grandfather sitting, you know, watching it with him. He was also a Browns fan. My dad's a Browns fan. My next door neighbor, good friend of mine, his name is Josh Lewis. He's a Bears fan, actually, which I am also because of him. We root for each other's teams. But watching Walter Payton, you know, I can remember Brian Sipe. I was really little, but I can remember him slinging the ball around. Guys like Dan Fouts from, you know, the Chargers.
You have a lot of the memories, a lot of good memories in the 80s, especially when the Browns were really, really good. But, of course, you know, I have to bring up the drive, you know, and the fumble. I have to bring that up just to remind you.
The first time I ever cried over a sports event, I remember that, like, I literally cried.
With the fumble?
Both times. It ripped my heart out, you know.
Well, that's the thing.
Invested at a very young age.
Yeah, well, that's the thing about sports. When the Titans were 1 yard short, that I can relate to that because I remember that idea, you know, if we were just 1 yard – that. If his arm was 1 yard longer.
In my opinion, that's probably the greatest Super Bowl ever. That, and I want to say maybe the Giants and Bills Super Bowl where
The
Bills missed a field goal. But, I mean, unfortunately, your Titans were on the other end of the, you know, short end of the stick. But
that was
a great Super Bowl.
That team, your Browns team in 1986, I want to say, probably could have won the Super Bowl that year. Looking at that team, that was a pretty good team.
Yeah, we had some good teams, but unfortunately, it just seems to never be on, not just the Browns. I mean, it seems to follow the city of Cleveland around. It's like a dark cloud that just stays there. Like the impending winter in, you know, Games of Thrones or something. It's just
winter is coming.
Winter is coming. Football's coming. Factory of Sadness will be here soon.
Well, at least you had draft day.
That's a good movie. That's a really good movie.
You know, people have downed that movie, but I think draft day is actually a pretty good movie. And I'm glad they picked the Browns because, I'm glad you also stuck with Brian Drew, you know. But I heard you mention your dad and your granddad. Are those two men the reason why you are a Browns fan today?
Yeah, and that I had a great uncle that was a really big Browns fan. He spent some time living in the Akron, Canton area and attended a lot of the games up there when he lived up there. And when he would come back to West Virginia to visit, it was, you know, he got me hooked at an early age on the Browns.
So, and when you mentioned West Virginia, he is a big Mountaineers fan. And I know that that's been actually pretty decent for you lately, but at least you got a team that you can root for. And right now, if you could see the video I'm showing right now that I'm watching right now, he is wearing a Cleveland Indians hat, so he is Cleveland through and through. Who are some of your favorite players in Cleveland Browns history?
Let me see here. Of course, Bernie. Bernie's always, usually everybody's number one, at least for my generation. I mean, before that, I'm sure the older guys, it was Jim Brown, you know, Otto Graham. But for me, it would be guys like Bernie, Eric Metcalf, Hanford Dixon, Clay Matthews. Notice that a lot of those guys were from the 80s and the early 90s.
Absolutely.
Outside of that, maybe a Josh Cribbs. He was a great kick returner for us. Michael Dean Perry was another one that comes to mind. Ernest Biner and Kevin Mack. Frank Minifield. But in recent years, I mean, it's you never know how long a guy's going to be there. Not to sound all doom and gloom, but unfortunately, I mean, that's the life of being a Browns fan. You know, you buy a jersey and you don't know if he's going to be there next year. It's just endless futility is what it seems like.
Well, you and I have talked about this too. What was your feeling when you heard the Browns were leaving?
I've started out with sadness. Well, I wouldn't even say sadness. It was shock, then sadness. Then it went on to just my question, how could you take away a team with such a loyal fan base? And then it was anger. And later, now looking back on it, I somewhat understand why he left. Because he gave them chances. He was paying on a stadium for years, paying for the upkeep. The city of Cleveland didn't hold up their end of the bargain. So he's not the only one to blame. The city of Cleveland and their elected officials, they had a play in that. But still, I don't see how and why they couldn't have worked something out.
I was looking, I think they did a 30 for 30 about this, Chad, or something to that. You might have seen it. Oh, I know you probably have. Sorry, my daughter is talking in the back there. That they went and gave the Indians a stadium. They gave the Cavaliers an arena, but they didn't give the Browns something. And to me, I think they missed the ball on that, because I think that was something that they should have gave the Browns an arena.
And the thing about Art was, to my knowledge, at least from interviews I've seen, he wanted to be loved. You know, he wanted people to like him, even though, you know, you get rid of Paul Brown, good luck with that. But, He gave a lot of money to, you know, charities and things like that in Cleveland, and he felt betrayed. So, and you know, he's not all to blame for that, in my opinion.
But how hard was it when you saw the Ravens within about what 3 or 4 years holding a Lombardi Trophy and knowing that could have been y'all's?
It was gut wrenching. Because that should have been our Super Bowl. I don't know if we would have drafted, you know, Ray Lewis but we might not even had Ozzie Newsome as a GM, which would be great in my opinion. I don't know why we haven't ever reached out to him and said, "Hey, you want to come over here? You want to come home?" He could obviously draft. He knows how to put a team together. He knows the team's history. So
that is, and the fact is, you guys had, and like you and I both agree, Marty Schottenheimer is a good coach. You had him, you had Bill Belichick, you had the coaches in place.
Had Nick Saban. Saban was also on that coaching staff.
Wasn't he the defensive coordinator for that staff? That staff was insanely good.
Right.
But I'm looking at the team as a whole. Ernest Biner got a bad rap, but at least he won a Super Bowl. And I believe Bernie was picked up by the Cowboys and won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah. So at least with those two guys. Yeah, those two guys, at least they won something. And that was but how did you feel when the Browns came back?
Cautiously optimistic. I mean, you know, you're happy to have your team back, but you know it's going to be a rebuild right off the bat. You're going to be an expansion. And like I said earlier, it always just seems to be it's a revolving door of players. And not, I mean, I'm never, you know, I know sounds like I'm downing my team, but I mean, it's not that I'm downing my team. I'm, you know, the Haslams, our previous owner, the Lerners, he spent more, his interest was more in English Premier League soccer. He had a team over there, Aston Villa, that's where his interests were. It wasn't with the Browns. The son, not the father, he was invested, but he passed away and left it to his son. And then the Haslams, they're inept, in my opinion. I mean, they can't get out of each other's way.
It's something tells me with an owner, I know owners like Dan Snyder and Jerry Jones, they want to be hands-on, but to me, if you hire a vice president or a general manager or something to that effect, just let them run the team.
Right. He would just step away, let Andrew Berry, the guy went to Harvard, so he's obviously an intelligent guy. I know he's more along the lines of the analytics of things. I don't know how that's going to work out.
A little bit of money ball, huh?
Right. A little bit of money ball. But the Haslams just seem to he wants to be a football guy. You can tell he wants to be a football guy, and he's not. You know, his world was flying J's and pilots, gas stations, and swindling people out of their money through coupon scams. I don't know if you heard about that.
I haven't, but I tell you what. If I was the multi-billionaire, I'd be like, you know what? Let me get the gear on and let you run the game.
Right. Just step out of the way. And that's why you hire people. I'm hoping he's starting to get there with, you know, to step out of the way. But like you said, we're already talking about drafting another quarterback. We'll find out, you know, this season. He's on a short leash. There's a reason why Stefanski brought Case Keenum in, obviously.
Yes.
He's familiar with his system in Minnesota. So if he looks and he sees, you know, Baker, he just doesn't have it. He's got his guy he can go to, you know. Whether or not Keenum can right the ship for us, the talent is obviously there, so it's just mind-boggling to me why we're not winning any ball games right now. But then again, I think the Ravens they're going to embarrass a lot of teams this year.
They look incredibly good. But both you and me, we both look at the Ravens and we just say, you know what, just stay over there in Baltimore. It's okay.
Yeah. Hate's not a strong enough word when it comes to Baltimore, and I don't use that word lightly, so we'll go with loathe.
I have a reason to despise them because of 2000. You have a reason to despise them for something right. A lot deeper than that.
Yes.
As much as I like Lamar Jackson, as much as I think that he's a good player, good guy, it's just But hopefully, like you said, hopefully your team can pull this through, and I'm hoping Baker, will turn it around a little bit to help your team out, because I think he has all the tools together to do it if he could just put it together.
I think he's gun shy. Like if he's staring down his receivers, he's dancing. Like he is, I guess, you know, you go through four coordinators and four coaches now.
Ooh.
Right. That's brutal. I mean, how can you, God bless the kid. I mean, I don't know how anybody could go through that.
No, I don't either.
And then,
you know, we experienced something like that with Jake Locker, very similar situation. And he ended up like a lot like Baker did, or Baker is right now.
But I think also today's NFL, if at least the teams that seem to be winning, outside of like your Drew Breeses and your Tom Brady's now, and they're up there in age, you got to have a mobile quarterback. And it seems like the ones that are winning, your Lamar Jacksons, your I can't think of his name in Kansas City right now, Patrick Mahomes,
yeah.
Russell Wilson, Watson. I mean, the league seems to, Kyler Murray, it seems to be going more towards your mobile quarterbacks. And I don't know, maybe we might be looking for another quarterback this year. Hopefully one with a little mobility. But the reason I brought up the mobility is maybe, even look for like a trade request or something. I know Mariota's a backup in Las Vegas now. And, you know, if Carr seems to be playing at least the first week, it looked pretty good. You know, maybe offer them something. We might be looking elsewhere.
Well, all this being said today, Chad, and again, thank you for your time. What makes football family to you? What makes it special to you?
What really was, and this is outside of the Browns games also, this also ties in with being from West Virginia. Sitting with my grandfather, he'd have the game on the radio. We wouldn't even have it on the TV half the time. We would, you know, the voice of the Mountaineers on the radio. And then as I got into being a Browns fan and going to some games or going to Browns Backers events, which is a club with fan clubs in every state, most major cities, just all over the world. But it's really like family for Browns fans. Like once you walk in, that's your brother right there. Like you know it right away because they know the loyalty you have towards that team and what it takes to be a Browns fan.
Do you eat dog biscuits?
No. That's another thing that, like, I remember being a kid and, like, you're watching that and that's something about the wind whipping around Municipal Stadium and coming off of Lake Erie, and it was usually blowing some type of debris onto the field. And
you don't get that with modern stadiums.
No. Grown men with no shirt on and it's 9 degrees below zero, and he's like, these people are insane. You know, how could you not at least have a respect for any, you know, a team base or a fan base like that? So I mean, I fell in love with it early.
I respect that. The dog pound, the history, you go from what you're saying, Paul Brown and Otto Graham and Jim Brown, and all the way up till even today. There's a history to the Cleveland Browns, and you cannot write the NFL history without putting the Cleveland Browns in there. And I respect that, and I appreciate you coming on and talking with us today.
Jeremy, I want to thank you for thinking of me for doing this. This is great. I love what you're doing here. Keep it up. I mean, I look forward to hearing future episodes of your podcast. And once again, thanks, man.
Thank you. And this is yet another reason why football is family.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
The Pigskin Tales podcast is all about the lesser known pro football players. Yes, there are stories about the ones we know, like Brad Tarkenton and Harold Red Grange. But have you ever heard of Ernie Nevers? How about Dave Osborne or even Grady Alderman? These men created their own path to the NFL. How did they do it? Listen to the Pigskin Tales podcast, now streaming on your favorite music platform. Go to pigskintales.com.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.